Thursday edition Fantasy Baseball Today. A lot to talk about. Already, the show hasn't even started yet, and people are bashing Adam Wainwright despite his 6 2/3 scoreless innings against the Rockies. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We have some emails from concerned listeners. Not concerned about our show, concerned about some of their fantasy players, and we will address those. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Al, Heath, Chris, what I want to know is, who is having the best morning of the three of you?
It's probably not Heath. He seems to have come in a sour mood today. I'm going to say Al.
Al is having the best morning in terms of productivity and performance. Al was here before I got here, which is unusual.
I was?
Yes.
Oh.
I believe so.
Because I walked in and you were at your desk.
Oh, well, you didn't have your computer, so I assumed...
Yeah, no, I came here, but I don't know how long
you were at your desk. Al didn't beat me here. No one ever does. But Al did bring Uncrustables for the podcast, so we all have Uncrustables here in front of us. Now, Adam...
Mm-hmm. I'm struggling through this Uncrustable
Chris
situation.
Is enjoying it. It's the biggest smile I've seen in 6 months.
No.
Which Chris doesn't really smile, so it's not that big a surprise. But he went and bought Uncrustables.
Right.
And I'm not going... I'm like, I'm enjoying this Uncrustables. So I'm not going to complain. But he did buy the reduced sugar Uncrustables on whole wheat bread.
Oh, my God. Who? Chris did or Al did?
No, I
did.
Al
did.
Well, okay.
Come on, Al. That's
so
weak.
You know that old saying, beggars can be choosers. So
yes.
This is...
It's not like they're bad.
No, they're good. I thought it was interesting that you had never tried an Uncrustable before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about how it was such a great snack. And so you went and brought the healthiest version possible.
Well, if I'm going to, you know, have a snack, I try to eat the healthy version.
See, I'm the opposite. Like, I try to eat healthy meals, but when I'm having a snack, yeah. it's generally like... The example I made, Adam, was if you met someone from outer space and you wanted to introduce ice cream to them, you wouldn't first
right.
give them the
no.
non-dairy, sugar-free
you would, you
version.
You would take them to Dairy Queen and give them a Blizzard.
Yeah, Heath Bar Blizzard. Yes, you love Heath Bar Blizzard. Don't act like you don't
know. Look, I worked at a Dairy Queen in high school. I know the benefits of a Heath Bar Blizzard, but cheesecake and Reese's Cups.
Reese's. It's all we need here. So I'm in a good mood because I have some fun trivia for you right off the bat. Now, Heath was supposed to be the trivia guy. He hasn't done that. He hasn't held up his end of the bargain. I will step up to the plate. Which team leads baseball in home runs?
The Rays. Cardinals.
Rays, Cardinals. Heath, Chris, you have a guess?
The Cubs.
The Rays! Can you believe that?
First time ever I win trivia.
Yeah, good job.
Congratulations, Al.
Yeah, the Rays, and they're 22nd in runs scored. How strange is that? They don't get on base, they don't hit for average, but they hit home runs. Alright, so that was round one of trivia. Now here's number two. We're going to go every position here. I want you to name the number one player in fantasy. Okay, let's start with catcher. Who's the number one catcher in fantasy? And for most of these, it's the same in both formats, but I'll specify when there's a difference in points in Roto. Let's
Jonathan
start with
LaCroix.
That's my guess, too. So we're going to tie if we're right.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
It's definitely not Jared Saltalamacchia.
It's Jonathan LaCroix. I was very surprised to see that.
Yeah, his, three straight games with a home run before last? Or uh-huh. four in a row now.
No, he didn't homer yesterday. So
and his OPS is up to like 930.
Yeah, he's doing Jonathan LaCroix things. Well, now a little bit more power lately, but whereas the rest of the catcher pool just kind of stinks this year.
That's amazing. So, yeah, is LaCroix is a clear number two catcher rest of season behind Posey?
I think so, yes.
What is going on over
there? I had the can higher earlier, but I've moved LaCroix ahead of him.
All right, come
Sorry,
on.
Sorry, I hear a noise, and then I look over, and Heath is just trying to very slowly.
Al brought Uncrustables. I just put like sit here for the whole show.
I've tried to eat out the air too. It's very difficult. You have to go very,
it's tough.
Very
it's
slow.
Especially with a mic right next to your mouth.
Yeah. No one would have known if Chris hadn't started laughing.
You could hear it.
All right, who's the number one first baseman in fantasy?
Anthony Rizzo.
That is correct. Who is the number one second baseman?
Jose Altuve, gone on a limb there.
That is correct. Number one third baseman in fantasy.
Manny Machado.
That is not correct.
How about Nolan Arenado?
That is correct. Good job. All right, Heath, who's the number one shortstop in fantasy?
Manny Machado.
There you go. All right, number one outfielder. Actually, how about top three outfielders? Top three outfielders.
Dexter Fowler?
No Fowler here.
Mike Trout.
He's in there. He's number three in both formats.
Harper?
He is number one in points. He is not in the top three in Roto.
Mm. And you don't get points for walks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're
Gregory Polanco.
No. All right, listen, this is interesting. The number one outfielder in Roto leagues and number two in points leagues behind Harper is Mookie Betts.
Oh, you know what? And Scott told me this just yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
Man. And yet I feel like he's not having a good season.
That's what Scott and I both said, too.
That's how good he is.
That is how good he is and
his
how good the Red Sox
is top
are.
Two.
I mean, it's really just that, like, he's on pace for, like, 135 runs, even though he has a .311 on base percentage. That's nuts.
Well, if he could ever develop some power to the opposite field.
He's starting to. A little bit this year, although the home run last night was pulled.
Yes, he did pull his dinger.
seven home runs.
He's basically having
like
a peak Jimmy Rollins season. Like the rate stats are just kind of fine, whatever. He's playing every single day and he leads the majors in plate appearances.
Okay, but Ryan, that's a big deal, obviously. But he's hitting .262. Betts got off to a slow start last year, and I think he ended up hitting around .295/.300 off the top of my head. Like, where do you think he's going to end up this year? I feel like the best is still yet to come for Mookie Betts, which is not to say he's going to finish number one, but I still think there's great production to come, if not better than what we've seen already.
I think there's better production to come in average and on base for sure. I think the run rate will probably slow down, as will the Red Sox offense just a little bit.
I was just looking at the batting average with runners in scoring position. It's .312, which is well above his batting average, but it's not like I would be shocked if he hit, you know, .310 the rest of the way.
Oh, I thought it was his runs that were way out of. Is it the
RBI?
Both.
Okay.
They're both. He's on pace for like 130 runs and like 120 RBI.
Well, and that's the thing with Jackie Bradley Jr. in front of you. It's like he's in the middle of the order and the top of the order.
Mm. Yeah. All right. So how many outfielders would you take rest of season over Mookie Betts?
Five or six?
Trout, Harper.
For me, it's going to be more. I'm sorry, but I want to consult my rankings just because I think I've got Betts, I want to say 10th, either 9th or 10th.
The big thing for me is that, and it's kind of like what we've seen in the past with like Hunter Pence and Adam Jones, where so much of their value was just based on accumulating stats, and that's really valuable. But like, if Mookie Betts has to miss 3 weeks, that kind of puts a huge dent in his season-long value in a way that wouldn't be true for some other outfielders who are better on a per-game basis.
Well, I don't know.
I actually have met Betts 11th now because I recently moved Cespedes ahead of him.
Oh, yeah. Cespedes, by the way, is also a top three outfielder in rotisserie.
So, you know, I see them being pretty similar.
Where do I have him, 6th or 7th?
You've got him. Scott has him 6th. You have him 6th. So I guess that does make me the low man on Mookie Betts, which is nothing new.
No, you have been forever.
Yeah. But it's hard to see me. Maybe I move him ahead of Chris Bryant, who I have 8th. Bryant probably needs to get dropped. I've got Springer. That's a tough call.
All right. How about this? I would take Betts over McCutcheon. How about you?
Man, if you had... No, I would not. But if you had Yu Darvish and Mookie and Cespedes on the same team, you could have a team name of Yu Betsio Anus.
Very good, Heath. Heath is weird today. This is a strange Heath Cummings day, and I like it.
No more Uncrustables for you.
You could make like a Pete Townsend reference with Yu Darvish and Mookie Betts. You better Yu Betts. It's a song.
It is.
You can't one up Yu Betsio Anus.
Yeah, God, I hate the Who.
I'm just wondering if there are children in the audience who don't want to hear that kind of talk.
Is that a Who song? Or
it is a Who song.
Yeah, God, they
I believe it's a Pete Townsend solo song, actually.
You believe it, but that belief would be false.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is, what a,
you're right. Damn it.
What an interesting show so far.
I think on the Face Dances album.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking of a different song.
Well, let's get into...
I was thinking of Let My Love Open the Door, which is a Pete Townsend solo song.
Oh, that's
damn
a fun one. Yeah.
Let's get going here.
Let's get into Wednesday's action. Wednesday's standout. So Adam Wainwright, not impressed, huh? Not feeling it. He has two starts next week, the Cubs and at the Nationals.
Yeah. I'm not starting a two-start Adam Wainwright against the Cubs and Nationals.
And neither am I.
No.
This is a big old fake out from Wainwright.
Like
fake out.
Best case scenario, he's a league average pitcher, I think, at this point. Like, I think that's just, I don't see how he can be better than that. I don't see anything that indicates that he's capable of anything more than that.
Yeah, he's consistently allowing a lot of contact. The quality of the contest is typically hard.
Yep.
Not getting ground balls like he used to. So I don't know how he's going to keep this going.
You know what Wainwright said last night?
Fool you!
All right.
That might be maybe my least favorite new addition to the baseball podcast.
I don't know what that is.
This fooled you thing.
You haven't heard the actual recording. You just hear me say it, and then I have to put the actual recording in after, so you don't get the
full
effect.
Yeah, I don't think the actual recording would make it better.
It does. It's very funny. I love it.
It is objectively funny.
Objectively.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Objectively.
Adam is being that guy who laughs at his own jokes.
Yeah, Heath is being the guy who's just like grumpy and mean today, so... how about a standout from Heath Cummings? Who are you happy about, Heath?
I'll tell you a guy that I'm moving up even further into the I think he's actually good range. I had to move him a long ways up to get into the he might be good range, and that is Rich Hill.
Oh yeah,
he just keeps doing it. This I'm glad Scott's not on today's show. Because with the way Danny Valencia is going and the way Rich Hill is going, we might just spend the whole episode talking about that. But listen, I still think that there is a pretty larger than non-zero chance that Rich Hill is going to hit a very rough spot in the future. But the way he's going right now, I don't know how you sit him.
Rich Hill is a top 20 pitcher in both formats right now. He's number 19 in points, number 11 in Roto, 6-3, 2.54 ERA. And yesterday he didn't have a control issue. He had only one walk against Texas, but three or four walks in five of his previous six starts. I guess he's one of these guys who's just not giving up a lot of hits, only 35 hits and 49 and two-thirds. So Rich Hill, are you ready to put him in the top 35 range in your starting pitcher rankings?
I doubt that. I had to come a long way to get him into my top 60. So I think he'll probably slide into my top 50 for sure, borderline top 40.
Who would you rather own, Liriano or Rich Hill?
Liriano.
Guys, you can all jump in there.
I've got Hill 42nd, but I do need to move him up because I think I'd rather have him than Liriano. So I need to drop Liriano, bring Hill up top 35 maybe.
Oh, there you go. Chris, Kenta Maeda or Rich Hill?
Maeda.
Okay.
I think he's still going to be less prone to bad starts.
And you don't particularly like Maeda.
It's not so much that I don't like him. I just never thought he was an ace.
Right.
Hey, Heath, have you ever seen Spaceballs, by the way?
Yes, but it's been a long time, and it didn't make a particularly big impression on me.
Well, then that explains why you don't like the new joke of the show. All right, Chris Towers, give me a standout from Wednesday.
Well, actually, I want a Thursday standout. Can we get an Adam Azer rant about Joe Girardi?
Oh my God, he was so stupid last night. That was I think Joe Girardi is a great manager, but that was the worst decision I can remember. Not saying it's the worst he's ever made, but the worst one I can remember him making. You've got Nate Eovaldi, who gives up a leadoff double to Gene Segura on a ground ball that hits the second base bag, pops up in the air, goes into the outfield, and gives Segura, who probably would have gotten a single, a double. After that, he threw a perfect game for the next six innings. He did not allow a base runner. He had thrown like 84 pitches. This was probably the best I've ever seen Nate Eovaldi pitch. He was unbelievable. And he flirted with a no-hitter against Texas last month. He took him out of the game for Betances, Miller, Chapman, which
what
is
an
fine.
Idiot.
It was dumb. I mean,
put Dellen Betances in the game?
Well, no, here's the thing. He doesn't want to use all three of those guys in the same game if he can avoid it. He said that. And he could have easily avoided that in this game. You leave Eovaldi in. The guy was pitching great. And Eovaldi, we can go right to him because he's a two-star pitcher next week. He's owned in 73% of leagues. He has Toronto at home, Tampa Bay on the road. Could be a lot of home runs. Yeah. But what an enigma this guy is. This is not the first time Eovaldi's looked great, and he usually follows it up with a stinker. What do you guys think?
I'm starting to buy into Nate Eovaldi.
Don't do it, Chris.
You know better. Against my better judgment, he's a different pitcher. I don't know how sustainable it is just physically to keep throwing 40% of your pitches as splitters, but there is a clear delineation between the point he started throwing more splitters and the point he started pitching better.
I will say the only thing that Chris likes more than current Marlins is former Marlins.
I have been a vocal Nate Eovaldi doubter, sir. You know, not everyone.
I need to see two or three good starts in a row before I truly buy it.
I mean, this is three in a row, four out of five.
No, it is not three in a row. His last start against the Royals.
Last one was three runs in five innings. Yes, you're right.
With two strikeouts, so three strikeouts or whatever against the Royals. He's got such a hittable fastball. I think that's kind of the issue.
Well, he's throwing it less.
Yeah, but you can't get away with not throwing your fastball. You can't have a bad fastball, even if it's 98, 99 miles per hour.
Oh, let's talk about Masahiro Tanaka.
Fine. What about him?
He doesn't throw his fastball.
Yeah, and look what's happened to him. He's
gotten hammered the last couple times.
All right.
You got to have a fastball. Well, okay. Eovaldi is interesting. Chris buying in. Al says not so fast.
I don't want to make it sound like I'm buying beachfront property on Nate Eovaldi Island or anything.
It is an
island. But I'm speculating. I've called up a travel agent. And I'm looking into it.
Chris, I can only say that after watching last night, I'm kind of with you. Like, there's potential there. It's very obvious. But it's hard to fully buy in. Al, how about a standout for you from Wednesday?
Well, I'd love to go with the hitter here, but instead I'm going to talk about Julio Teheran.
All right. You guys are ruining my legitometer segment, by the way, but that's fine.
Legitimeter on Teheran?
Yeah, well, I had it on Rich Hill. I had it on Julio Teheran, but I got other guys on there, so feel free. Go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, this is now six starts in a row with two runs or fewer. And four times out of the last five starts that Teheran has gone at least seven innings. So he's back to being more efficient, throwing a little bit more in the strike zone than he has in the past. But you know, when he was really good, he got a lot of pop-ups, and when he did, and he's, you know, sort of leans towards being a fly ball pitcher, but not really hard contact on the fly balls. Now Heath is sitting behind me today for some weird reason.
Yeah.
So you can see everything that's on my screen.
That was one of the reasons.
Yeah. And what you're looking at right now is a baseball heat maps graph of the average fly ball distance for Julio Teheran this season. And since, you know, this is not a visual medium, I'm going to, you know, it's how you sort of translate. So I think the trend is interesting.
Yeah, there's a squiggly line and a lot of dots above and below the line.
Yeah, what's the squiggly line doing?
It's down overall.
Yeah, lower distances, shorter distances would actually be the better way to say it in the English language. So Teheran was really bad early on. He's getting hit hard.
Here's the thing about Julio Teheran.
And now he's not much like when he was very good.
Because I watched his, not this start, I didn't watch him last night, but I watched his last start against the Royals. And I don't, like, I can't say that I saw a lot of Julio Teheran from 2 to 3 years ago, but I could not believe how many times the catcher was setting up in one spot and he was throwing the ball 2 feet away on the other side of the plate. Like, it seemed like he had almost no idea where the ball was going. And that's, I will say, if you can be around the strike zone and have no idea where the ball is going, that can be tricky for hitters. It's tricky for hitters to guess where the pitch is going to be if the pitcher can't guess where the pitch is going
also
to be.
Tricky for Tyler Flowers.
Yes. There were multiple times where he was setting up for a pitch low and outside and the ball almost hit the batter.
The one thing I will point out is, his infield fly ball rate is actually a career low. Right now, his hard hit rate is a career high, which I don't think hard hit rate has all that much.
But you're looking at season long, right?
Yes.
That's trending. Those are both trending in the right direction now.
Okay.
I can verify that. I saw on Al's computer.
There were squiggly lines, like you said.
You know what would have been great, Heath, if you looked at Al's computer and you said, well, we've got the bleeps, the sweeps, and the creeps. But of course you wouldn't get that because it's from Spaceballs, which is an amazing movie. Taran, here's the one thing I can take solace in, because I remember saying that I would take Juan Nicasio over Julio Taran after like Nicasio's first start, and just because I was so down on Julio Taran. I appear to be wrong there, but he's got a 273 ERA, and Taran's 1-4. So I do think that's going to hold his fantasy value back.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The win's going to be tough. He did win last night, so.
Yeah, he's in the win column now.
That's good for him. All right, I got one more standout here. I've been trying to get him in the show notes for the last 2 days. It hasn't happened. I failed miserably, and now he hits two home runs, and now it just looks like I'm, you know, following the trends. But Jay Bruce, even before this two-homer game, was having a really nice season. And right now, Bruce is the number 23 outfielder in points, number 15 in Roto, a .290 batting average with 8 home runs and 7 doubles. Not a ton of power, but better average than what he's been giving us. What do you guys think about Jay Bruce? Where should he be in the rankings at this point?
I'm going to say the same thing I'm pretty sure I said the last time we talked about Jay Bruce, which is, did you realize he's only 29? It feels like he's been in the majors since like the mid-80s.
Yeah.
And it feels like we've written him off already based on the last couple seasons. And maybe, you know, it seems like we were doing that prematurely. He's been able to sustain the lower strikeout rate that he had last season, but he's just hitting the ball better along with that, which is a very good sign.
I've got Jay Bruce right in the I would guess for several of people that these guys are not all right together in the rankings, but right in the Ian Desmond, Mark Trumbo range.
How is it that you have Ian Desmond ranked higher among outfielders than I do? That's crazy.
He's been really, really good.
Yes,
has. I've admitted that, like everyone, let's bring up another guy that Heath was wrong about this preseason. Ian Desmond, everybody.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people were probably wrong about Ian Desmond. He's the number 2 shortstop, I think, in fantasy now behind Machado. He actually, at the moment, might be ahead of Machado. I'm not sure. Machado's a little bit cold, and Desmond's keeping it going. Now, emails from some concerned listeners. Let's talk about some guys who are slumping. Actually, let me read the big news first. We're 20 minutes into the show here. Sam Dyson is temporarily replacing Sean Tolleson as the Rangers closer. So, yeah.
Did you put air quotes around temporarily?
Dyson has not been quite as good as he was last year, but still pretty good. So what's your level of excitement for Dyson?
Pretty low.
Yeah.
Not because I think that Tolleson's necessarily coming back. I think Dyson could be just fine as a closer. But a slightly richer man's version of Brad Ziegler, you know, just a ground ball guy who's not going to get many strikeouts.
I will say, like, the version of Sam Dyson that we saw last season, where he was getting close to a strikeout per inning, is a lot more interesting than the one we've gotten this season, where his strikeout rate's way low.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, I think he'll be fine. It's just in a league, you know, like our podcast listeners league, where there's saves on waivers. I'm not making a move to get him.
I think that Dyson point brings up something I wanted to talk about today. And it can be quick, but we're a quarter of the way through the season, almost exactly, for most teams. And there is a point that we reach where what the player has done this year becomes more predictive than what the player did last year.
Right.
And I don't think it's the quarter mark, but it's like a sliding scale where this year is getting more and more important and last year is getting less and less important. Al's looking at me as if he doesn't agree.
No, I'm known on the podcast for the gurgle, but I heard somebody gurgle.
That was Chris.
Oh, okay.
Obviously.
Weird.
Making lots of good noises.
So we just can't let things go today, huh?
No.
Al has had some epic gurgles in the past. I kind of missed them.
He just went. I know what you're saying, Al, because then, like, whenever you're known for doing something that's not necessarily good, and
we,
it happens.
Are we middle schoolers?
No.
He did it.
No. It's just that Al doesn't want to get an email blaming him for this gurgle. He wants to make sure that everybody knows it wasn't him because he's known as the gurgler. So an unmarked gurgle gets associated to Al. But like, I wonder what, how far you think we are into this year matters more than last year.
I pretty much agree with how you just summed it up. It's closer to equal weight now. I mean, this really, you know, obviously it matters for players that I think we weren't sure about coming into this year.
Right.
And so I think for those players, now look, for somebody who's well established, let's say Daniel Murphy, you know, I still don't have him anywhere close to where he would be in my rankings if I were weighting this year more heavily, you know, because I feel like we know who Daniel Murphy is. Now, I've you know, made some concession to what he's done because it's not only this year, but the second half of last season. But for, you know, for a player like him, it's still, this quarter season doesn't hold that much weight. But Chris, we were kind of talking about this yesterday, so I'm trying to think of some of the players we were talking about, like players that I was on the fence about, where, you know, these 40 or so games for me are holding a lot of weight. And, there and neither one, of us can remember
yeah,
any
there was
of them.
One player in particular that we were talking about.
It wasn't Chris Davis.
No. But anyhow.
Well, I can read. Let me read the emails then, and the guys that our listeners are concerned about, and I'll just lump them all into one.
Like someone like Castellanos, do you wait this season more than you would for someone like Daniel Murphy?
That's a very good example, and yeah, I definitely would. There's also a little bit of confirmation bias there for me with Castellanos because I had him as a breakout candidate with more power, and yeah. He's also broken out in batting average, and I'm not buying that as much.
Well, here are some listener concerns. Dustin, Mike from Canada, he wrote that, and Chris are concerned about Rendon, Votto, and Iwakuma. What about you guys? Like Dustin wants to know if he should give up on Rendon. Mike from Canada, is just very concerned about Joey Votto. He's freaking out, and Chris wants to know if he should drop Iwakuma for Alex Wood or Adam Conley.
I'm going to go to Iwakuma first because that's been a real dilemma for me the last week or so because I've really wanted to drop him. And the only thing that's really prevented me from dropping Iwakuma is how it looks, to be honest. Full disclosure here. Just because I think I talked him up quite a bit. And I just worry that if I dropped him, he'd be the sort of person that other people would pick up because they valued him as somebody who shouldn't be dropped. But deep down, I really feel like he's droppable.
Is this a situation where we maybe should have believed the Dodgers doctors and training staff a little more? Like, there's a reason that a team with a literally infinite amount of money decided not to sign him, right? Like, they were worried about his health. He's 35 years old. It wouldn't be crazy for a 35-year-old who had injury problems last season to take a step back. And it's not like he was an elite guy. Hadn't really been since 2013. So I don't think it's crazy to drop him.
And this email says that Iwakuma is a slow starter. Well, I think in part he was a slow starter last year because of health issues.
Yeah. Well, so, he turned it on so much, though, in the last two months of the season, which is why I might pick him up if you put him out there on waivers. But no, I mean, I go back to Grant Balfour. I don't remember the exact scenario, but I think the Orioles had signed him and then they negated the deal because of an injury. And then I think he went to Tampa Bay and was horrible.
Yep.
I feel like that's what happened with Balfour.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So I see what you're saying, Chris, in terms of Iwakuma and the Dodgers. I don't know. I'm quite ready to drop him, Al, but I know what you're saying. I think I'd pick him up if you dropped him. I'm not saying that'd be a good thing, though. Well, how about Votto and Rendon, guys? What do you think?
I'm going to be quite possibly, by the end of this season, the last man on Anthony Rendon is good. He hasn't been that bad. Island, so I guess I will talk about him. I look at all the peripherals and I keep thinking, and I wrote about it, 3 weeks ago now, that he was going to be fine. He was getting ready to break out. He still has a 37% hard contact rate. He still has a 22% line drive rate. He still has the highest walk rate and the lowest K rate of his career. Not of his career, much lower than what it was over limited data last year and the highest walk rate. I don't believe he's hitting the ball like a 237 hitter with an 083 ISO. I'm not giving up on it.
And I think I am the low guy here on Rendon. And again, this is kind of a case of, I think, the 40 games or so confirming what I came into the season being worried about, which was that his power year where he hit 21 home runs, 12 of those were categorized by Hit Tracker as short distance.
And I can deal with that. Maybe he's not going to hit that many home runs. But the way he's hitting the ball right now, he should be hitting a ton of doubles. He should be hitting for a high BABIP, and he's doing neither.
That's fair.
And, the hard hit rate is up. It's not just that. His stat cast, he's in the top, 35-ish in average exit velocity, right around Jose Bautista, George Springer, Anthony Rizzo, guys like that. So it's not really – he's hitting the ball well.
Right. And he's not swinging at a bunch of bad pitches. I mean, he's doing everything we want hitters to do except for getting results.
Well, how about Joey Votto batting .214 with 5 home runs, 26 walks, 43 strikeouts, which is a lot for him, more than a strikeout per game for Joey Votto. That's what has people concerned. How about you guys? How concerned are you about Joey Votto?
The strikeout rate is a slight concern, but beyond that, pretty much everything else we would say about Anthony Rendon, you could also say about Joey Votto. His hard hit rate is not just up, it's higher than it's ever been. It's 45.7%. That's extremely high. That's like the type of mark that would lead baseball if he could do it for a full season. So he's still making good contact, and it's just not leading to power right now. And I stand by the statement that I've made in the past, which is that I will worry about him when he starts hitting infield fly balls, and he has still yet to hit an infield fly ball.
Eric Hosmer or Joey Votto, rest of the season?
Votto. I mean,
yeah.
Easy.
I am still bordering on moving him ahead of Abreu, but I have Votto ahead of Abreu too, so.
Okay. Votto ahead. Yeah, that was the next one I was going to say. So Heath likes Votto better than Abreu. Al, Chris, who would you rather have, Votto or Abreu?
Votto.
Yeah.
All right, now let's get back to the news. Yu Darvish is going to make one more rehab start before joining the Texas rotation. Rest of season, Rich Hill or Yu Darvish?
Yu Darvish.
You. Me.
Yu Darvish or Danny Salazar? Who would you rather have?
Oh, Salazar.
Salazar.
Nah, why? Just because of the Tommy John? You think he just won't be as good?
Well, you run the risk of him struggling. You run the risk of what we saw with Jose Fernandez last season, where he comes back. He looks pretty good, but then he suffers a minor setback that, comes with not pitching for a year. And there, you're not probably going to get him all the way through to the end of the season.
Well, and let's not also gloss over the fact that Danny Salazar has just been amazing.
Yeah,
I know. But Darvish was, by his own right, pretty amazing.
He's been, I think he's been the best strikeout pitcher in baseball since he entered the league. I believe he leads baseball in K per nine since he came into the league.
Adrian Gonzalez should be back this weekend. Devin Travis moved his rehab to AAA. Oh, man. Ryan Braun. He's
shocking.
Got back stiffness. He was scratched yesterday. Every time he's had a little injury, he comes back the next day, and it's no big deal. But he had off-season back surgery, so... I've been worried about it for weeks, and so far it hasn't been a problem. I'm hoping for the same. Shortstop news. Aledmys Diaz committed his 10th error. Johnny Peralta expected to start a rehab assignment today. Look into your crystal ball and tell me the future of the middle infield in St. Louis.
Well, last I read, which was probably about a week ago, Mike Matheny said that he was going to look for ways to keep Diaz in the lineup pretty much every day. When Peralta comes back, maybe playing Peralta, I think, at the corners, which is tricky, especially if you're talking about third base, because I don't know where Matt Carpenter goes. Maybe he goes to second. But, certainly they have moving parts all over the field, and they seem to be willing to work with Diaz's defensive struggles to keep his bat in the lineup.
I mean, they don't really have a first baseman.
Yeah.
Well, they've got three of them.
They've got an exceptionally disappointing second baseman. There's plenty of, if Aledmys Diaz can, and he's not going to continue to hit like this, but if he continues to hit, he's going to play almost every day.
If he loses his job because of defense with the way he's hit, we take to the streets and we riot.
See, don't underestimate defense, Chris.
I Don't underestimate offense. He's been the best, maybe the best hitter in baseball so far. Like, I don't care how bad your defense is.
Did you just say that Aledmys Diaz has been maybe the best hitter in baseball?
He did say, I heard it.
Yeah, he said that for sure.
Yeah, that's just not true.
If he would have said that like 4 days ago, it would have been statistically
like,
accurate.
Oh, let's make it sound like it's ridiculous. The guy's hitting 376 with a 1051 OPS. Like, he's been one of the best hitters in baseball.
He's no Daniel Murphy.
He's on the short list of best hitters in baseball.
He's no Daniel Murphy.
Yeah, no, he's no Daniel Murphy. I don't own Aledmys Diaz in any fantasy leagues. I don't own Johnny Cueto in any fantasy leagues. That's not good. But last night I could have owned Cueto on my FanDuel team. That's what we recommended here on the podcast. Hopefully you listened. And that's what I love about FanDuel. No season-long commitment. You get a new team every day. Contests start at just $1. You get to play fantasy baseball for a low price with a chance to win real money. That sounds like a pretty good idea and opportunity to me. Now, you want Mike Trout, Bryce Harper on your team? You can make that happen on FanDuel.com. You think you know something that nobody else has picked up on? Well, start that sneaky player in FanDuel, get the advantage, win some money. Special offer for new users. Sign up today, enter your first league, either win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. Go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, sign up with our promo code. It's HOMERUN. The promo code again is HOMERUN. Take advantage of that special offer for new users. All right. Now let's go to the legitometer. We can knock Julio Teheran and Rich Hill off here. So what is happening over there?
We're really having some trouble with the sound. Chris, I don't know what's wrong.
There are a couple things going on.
I don't know what's wrong with Chris today. Adam, I'm sorry. We're trying to put together a professional podcast. And there's just giggling, and I'm trying
yeah,
to...
Yeah, it's me. It's my fault.
I'm trying to maintain a solid podcast environment here.
I appreciate that, Heath.
It's a struggle.
Let's do the legit-o-meter.
Okay.
All right, so what I want to know is what you've seen so far. How legit is it? 0 to 10. 0 is sell high. This guy is bogus. 10 is totally legit. Hooray. Chris Tillman, 6-1, 2.61 ERA. Chris Tillman, legitometer.
I will give Tillman a 7. So I almost totally bought in there. He's been pretty consistent, and I think that's why I don't go a little bit higher, because he's had a history of wild swings and inconsistency. But I do worry about the fly ball tendencies in the AL East, but, you know, I think he can overcome them because he's just missing a lot of bats.
Fellas?
Yeah, I'm going to go the polar opposite of that, and I will go with a 3. I think last year, Chris Tillman was mostly a mid-3s ERA pitcher.
Oh, I love this stat.
The 2 years before, he was mostly a mid-3s ERA pitcher. This year, he's going to be basically a mid-3s ERA pitcher. The stat that Al loves is the fact that he had a 4.99 ERA last year, but the Blue Jays were responsible for about a run and a half of that ERA. Yes, the strikeouts are up. I think maybe he could have the highest strikeout rate of his career. I don't believe he's going to strike out 9.2 batters per nine like he is right now, though. I see some regression coming, probably in the form of about another 0.7 on top of that ERA, so maybe a 3.3. guy with 15 wins and 8.5 strikeouts per nine.
Here's the thing with Tillman, though, because around midseason, he had, it was only like a 4 or 5 start stretch where he was completely dominant.
Okay.
And then he injured his ankle, came back, and was not very good. Now he hasn't carried over all the things that made him so great during that brief stretch. He was getting lots of ground balls, which he's not doing now. But he was, and I think he had better control at that point. But I think that there was there was certainly a legitimate change in his arsenal and how he sort of approached things. He took a different spot on the pitching rubber. And I think he's carried some of those things over this year. So I don't think he's just the same guy he was the last 3 years.
All right, let's go to the next one. Chris, you can weigh in first here. And I'm going to call this guy a sell-high candidate because I look at the competition that he's faced. He has had a very, very easy schedule. And the really tough team that he faced, the Cubs, lit him up. Gio Gonzalez, 1.86 ERA. I mean, look, obviously nobody expects him to be sub 2, but I'm not putting him very high on my legitometer. How about you, Chris? Gio Gonzalez.
He's a tough player because for most of his career, he's been the type of pitcher that pitches exactly to his peripherals. You know, 2012, 2.89 ERA, 2.82 FIP, 3.36 ERA, 3.41 FIP the next season. In the last two seasons, he's been pretty significantly worse than his FIP, even though his FIP's been really consistent. And this season, his FIP is right where it was last season, but his ERA is way better. I buy him as a 3 ERA pitcher. So I don't know what that translates to on the legitometer. Let's say a 5.
I'll go with a 4.
I'll go 6 because I don't think anybody's expecting to be sub 2 ERA. I think the question is just, is he a better pitcher than he was last year? And even though the K's haven't been there in the same way, I do think he's a better pitcher than he was last year. So...
Okay. There are two pitchers that I've noticed that have really taken advantage of their matchups. And here's the thing with Gio. Like, he just did this against the Mets last night. The Mets are not very good against lefties. They have the 23rd best OPS against lefties, and it makes sense. Granderson, Conforto, important hitters for them, not so great against lefties. He faced the Royals earlier this year. The Royals haven't been a good hitting team, especially then. He's also faced the Phillies twice, the Twins, and the Braves, and the Marlins. And the other pitcher that has taken advantage of the matchups is Jaime Garcia. I'm not sure if you guys have looked into that at all. Just two pitchers that I've noticed have had really easy matchups, and when they haven't had easy matchups, they haven't done nearly as well.
The only thing I'll say about that is, if you're telling me that an NL East pitcher has had a lot of good matchups, I would tell you that an NL East pitcher is going to have a lot of good matchups. He's faced the Marlins, the Phillies, and the Braves 4 times this year. I mean, what percentage, like 45% of their games or 40% of their games are going to come against those 4 teams this year?
Yeah,
that's true. That's I always say this, but that's why I never gave up on Jordan Zimmermann last year, and he kept letting me down. But no, that makes a lot of sense. All right, moving on. Next on the legitometer, Stephen Wright. Great job by the Royals broadcaster to make a bunch of Stephen Wright jokes going to commercial break yesterday. Hilarious stuff. Stephen Wright, 83% owned. He's got 2 starts, home against Colorado at Toronto. Kind of a scary week, maybe. Well, Toronto's not exactly what they used to be, but what do you think about Stephen Wright? How legit is he? 0 to 10.
I give him a 9, and he's already his first start this year was at Toronto. It was a good one. He has pitched at Yankee Stadium, U.S. Cellular Field, Minute Maid Park. So he's pitched in a lot of tough venues, and every start except for his start at home against the Astros has been a good start.
I know.
I tell you, there's few things I get as much joy from in a baseball game as watching a professional major league catcher try to catch a good knuckleball. Because these are like the best at what they do in the world, and they just look like fools trying to catch it. That part of Stephen Wright is fun. I would say 9 is fine as far as legitometer for what he's done so far. One of the favorite things of mine that Chris has ever said, and it's a short list, is that knuckleballers are random number generators. And I do believe that.
I just don't know, like, because what they do is so different from what everyone else does, I kind of feel like the traditional things that we use to measure pitchers by don't really apply. And maybe that's wrong, but I just like, I have trouble. The one thing that's weird with Stephen Wright for me is that traditionally, the one thing that knuckleballers have been able to do exceptionally well consistently is get infield fly balls. If you look at R.A. Dickey's infield fly ball rate, it's 11% for his career. He's had a bunch of seasons above that. That's typically pretty high for knuckleball pitchers. He has yet to induce an infield fly ball this season.
Wow.
He has 0 infield fly balls.
That's not what Baseball Reference says, but...
I'm going by FanGraphs.
That's fine. They've got him with a 5% rate, which is very low.
Yeah, I mean, that's just... Like, that would be not that great for a regular pitcher, let alone a knuckleball pitcher. So it's just really weird. I know he's still generating a lot of soft contact, which is a good sign. It's just... I'll plead ignorance on this. I don't know how to say whether a knuckleball pitcher is legit, and I think R.A. Dickey's career is a pretty good indication of why that's hard to do.
Al, well, hold on. Let me jump in. You say that Stephen Wright is a 9 on your legitometer. That means to me that you think Wright's going to be in your lineup starting for you, not necessarily every week, but most weeks for the rest of the season. That's what that
absolutely
says to me. You really feel that way?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he's now had 8 starts and 7 of them have been very good. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. Enough consistency for me. And part of the consistency that has me sold on him is every start he's had at least 11 swings and misses. Oddly enough, the one that he didn't was against the Astros. So I can't explain that. But, you know, a pitcher that can get, you know, teams like the Royals and the Yankees swing and miss, you know, a dozen times or more. There's something there.
Fellas, we got about 15 minutes left. Sorry, Chris. And I got about 30 players left in the notes. So let's light speed's too slow, Heath. Prepare the ship for ludicrous speed. These guys just keep on hitting. Jackie Bradley, 24-game hitting streak. Marcell Ozuna, 85% owned, and he's now batting .302 with 7 home runs and 5 doubles. Chris Davis, 75% owned, another home run, so that's 4 in his last 2 games. Ian Kinsler's homered in 4 straight games for the first time in his career. Eduardo Nunez, 35% owned, and you know, still .340 batting average, 7 steals and 9 attempts. And Cameron Maben stole his third base in 3 games. I gave you Bradley, Ozuna, Chris Davis, with a K, Ian Kinsler, Nunez, and Maben. Anything really jump out at you guys?
I have to say not really, because, yeah, it is just more of the same for Bradley and Ozuna.
Just a bunch of streaky players being streaky. And then Ian Kinsler, who's great and really underrated.
Yeah, although he's a little hard to figure, too, because, you know, earlier in the career, reliable power.
Yeah.
Not so much for a while. Second half last year, kind of up and down. So it's kind of, I guess I'm a little bit skeptical of the level of power he's shown, but he doesn't have to go forward with that pace to be one of the top 4 or 5 second basemen in fantasy. So I'm, you know,
he's, I'm fine with Kinsler. The one thing is he's back to hitting fly balls like he used to in his Texas days. His ground ball rate is a career low 29.8%. His fly ball rate is 47%, which is the highest it's been since 2009 and the second highest of his career. So it does give you an indication of what he's doing as far as hitting for power. Now, the home run to fly ball rate is 3 times higher than it was last season, so that's probably going to come down. But I think I'm not buying 30 homers. I don't think he's going to be a 30 homer hitter again, but I'm buying a breakout hitter.
Okay.
Yeah. Jackie Bradley is this guy that I feel like I just have to move up every single day in my rankings. He's a diamond in the back of the Red Sox lineup.
What if they move him out of the 9 hole?
They have.
He's terrible again.
They have.
Oh, where is he now?
Yeah, I think he was hitting 7th.
Oh.
He hit 8th at least in 1 game. I've got a lot of regret for not believing him in her earlier.
Well, again, I mean, Bradley did do this last year and then he was awful. Just saying. But I'm going to give you guys 4 names. I want you to rank these outfielders. Yasiel Puig, Jackie Bradley, Jay Bruce, Marcell Ozuna.
I'm sorry, who's the third one?
Jay Bruce.
Bruce.
I would go Bruce, Puig, Ozuna, Bradley.
Bruce,
wow.
Bruce Bradley, or I'm sorry, Puig, Bradley, Bruce Ozuna.
Puig, Bruce, Bradley, Ozuna.
Ooh. And you put Ozuna ahead of Jackie Bradley, Chris Towers.
Yeah.
Well, Jackie Bradley doesn't play for the Marlins.
I mean, Ozuna's done it for a full season before. Bradley's but never done that.
He's never done what Jackie Bradley's doing over...
Jackie Bradley's not going to keep doing what Jackie Bradley's doing either. Like, it's 80 games. He's been awesome. I'm not taking that away from him, but I'm not gonna all of a sudden say that he's a mid-800s OPS guy.
Okay. Bradley has hit 7th 3 games in a row.
So far, so good.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Skip around here. Well, you know, let's go 3 up. We got Corey Seager, who over his last 28 days is the number 3 shortstop at fantasy behind Desmond and Bogarts. And
it's good.
Yeah, he's hitting well. Matt Wieters caught 2 straight games, which is unusual for him. Wieters is still 65% owned, and yeah, I mean, he's been awful, but he did homer and had 2 doubles yesterday. And Rajay Davis had a big game with 2 home runs and his 9th steal, 3 straight multi-hit games. He's been batting leadoff about every other game recently. Anything jump out with you guys with Corey Seager, Matt Wieters, Rajay Davis?
Well, yeah, Davis definitely jumped out for me because, you know, since the playing time hasn't been consistent, I was not assuming he was one of the leaders in stolen bases, even though, you know, that's his thing. So yeah, when I actually was looking at the stolen base rankings this morning, that definitely surprised me.
Yeah, and well, with Brantley out, so more opportunity for Davis for now, right? Makes sense, I guess.
And Corey Seager is who we thought he was.
All right, four down. Lorenzo Cain.
With Tyler Naquin going down, that probably opens up even more playing time for Rajay Davis, right?
Did he go down again?
Yeah, he was sent down.
So there you go.
All right, four down. Lorenzo Cain, who has done really nothing since the three-homer game. Matt Duffy, who hit two home runs in his first three games and has been awful since. Ben Revere, 67% owned, and I know people are panicking a little bit about him. He's batting 0.96 and 52 at-bats.
Betting average is really down in the dirty.
And Brock Holt, who is still 63% owned for some reason. People need to drop Brock Holt. Lorenzo Cain, Matt Duffy, Ben Revere, Brock Holt. Any long Holt? Do you guys? If you disagree with me on Holt, speak now or forever hold your peace.
No.
If not, with the other three guys, are there any long-term concerns for Cain, Duffy, and Revere?
I think there's long-term concerns for Cain. If you like, there were people that were drafting him as like borderline top 12 outfielder. I never got to that point, but if you, I have no confidence he's going to do that again. I've got him right around 20th, I think, in my outfielder rankings, and I feel pretty confident in that.
And you know, I mean, Adam said he's done nothing since the three homer game. He had also done nothing before that. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, how low do you want to move him?
It's one good season, you know, like. It's one great season and then two pretty good seasons.
Right. Hey, Chris, Marcelo Zuna or Lorenzo Cain?
Oh, definitely anyone who plays for the Marlins.
Okay, just
Connor Gillespie.
Well, okay, here's a real one: Christian Yelich or Lorenzo Cain.
They're both probably Cain's gonna steal more bases, probably, right?
I would expect that. Yeah.
But what other edge does he have?
Well, I think they could be pretty. I think Cain could out homer Yelich.
Okay.
Although we're seeing more power from Yelich
this
year.
And Yelich is fifth right now in average exit velocity.
I would expect, and this may end up being false, but if we're just talking about the five roto categories, I would expect Cain to score more runs than Yelich.
Okay.
But it's to this point. I mean, I've got Cain 21st. I just looked, and I've got Yelich 31st. There's not a huge gap between 21 and 31. I don't think it's an unreasonable argument to say Yelich could be better than Cain.
I would take Cain.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you would too, but I certainly do need to move Yelich up. I'm not really that worried about Cain. I think he's going to be fine. I think Matt Duffy of the Giants will also be fine too. He's actually in some ways been better this year. Better plate discipline. Just getting BABIPped for no apparent reason.
And Revere is 67% owned, and I just want to point out he's been a top 30 outfielder in both formats two straight years. So, you know, he feels like a roto specialist because of the steals, but he's really just, if he plays every day and hits at the top of the order, Revere is going to be a guy that's probably a little underrated, and 67% owned, you might want, I don't know. He's not
can stop striking out. He struck out in 17.5 percent of his plate appearances. I know it's only 57, so that can equalize. And he got off to a really slow start last season as well. He's had some bad luck with the BABIP gods as well, but it's not been a great start for him.
I'm holding on to him
for
now. I'm not probably going to start him moving forward, but I want him on my bench because I think if you drop him, this is a guy by the All-Star break, he might break your heart.
And he's probably like, just in terms of the skill set that he has, it's hard for him not to hit 290. You know, like just because he puts the ball in play so much, he's so fast that like he's going to end up there at some point.
Yeah, Revere has batted 305 or 306 in three straight seasons. There were a lot of pitchers yesterday who are just very average that have two starts next week. And, you know, they include Shelby Miller, Bartolo Colon, Doug Fister, Jeremy Hellickson, Nick Tropiano, Mike Clevenger. I said average. That might be generous for a lot of those guys. We can talk about them tomorrow when we look at the two-star pitchers. As far as yesterday's guys go that are better than average, Do you have any strong opinions on any of the following players? Justin Verlander, Francisco Liriano, Taijuan Walker, Edinson Volquez, or John Lackey?
I did. I wrote about Justin Verlander in my mailbag piece yesterday on CBSSports.com. You should read it, Heath.
You should.
And
make sure we put a link in the show notes.
Justin Verlander is something that someone pointed out to me on Twitter. He is throwing his slider pretty significantly harder of late, and it's kind of coincided with him pitching better. I don't know if that's a correlation doesn't equal causation thing, but he's been averaging 87 to 88 miles per hour with his slider over his last five starts. Basically in the month of May, he was more like 84 in April, so that's something to keep an eye on.
I like Justin Verlander quite a bit. Liriano, was this encouraging for Liriano?
It was so weird. I watched quite a bit of that game. Don't ask me why. And it seemed like either his stuff wasn't quite as good, or because I don't believe that he just intentionally pitched to contact. Although we kind of saw the same thing with Edinson Volquez when he faced the Braves. He had an extremely low pitch count, got through seven innings and 83 pitches, I think. Pitchers, I wonder if one of the reasons the Braves aren't striking out as much is because pitchers just have no fear. So they're just pounding the strike zone, and the Braves are good enough to put a bat on the ball. But like Liriano's command looked pretty good. He just wasn't really, the strikeouts weren't there, and he gave up a couple of runs, but two, you're not going to get too upset over that type of outing.
No, no. Okay. I was going to say something about the Braves, but I'm going to save my breath.
What? I think that's a fascinating theory about the Braves. So, of course, I'm doing immediately doing a sort to percentage of pitches that a team sees in the zone. And the Braves are not near the top.
Huh. There goes that theory. Thanks,
it
Al.
It made a lot of sense. I liked it. They are, in fact, they're 20th.
See, that would have been a great time for a fool's you, Heath. Great time.
Yeah. I'm so disappointed in the three of you right now anyway.
Why?
That I'm not in the mood for that.
What did we do?
You said about 10 minutes ago that we needed to, the speed we were moving wasn't fast enough. We needed to move at ludicrous speed.
Right.
And since then, almost every player that I have given analysis on, I've used a ludicrous song in that analysis.
Oh, really?
I completely missed it.
No one's noticed.
That's really
good.
I
have to tell you. So now it's not even good.
I don't know any ludicrous songs except for, you know, the lick, 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 lick you thing. Did you say that one?
What?
If you had referenced that ludicrous song.
That's a song in Ludacris's au revoir.
Almost all of the most popular Ludacris songs I couldn't use because I didn't want to go where you went the first time you said a sentence about him.
Well, so I just thought you were talking about fantasy, like fantasy baseball.
They're pretty vulgar, yeah. They're, get back, mother effer. You don't know me like that.
What the? I don't know what's wrong with you guys.
Yeah, no, we'll
great video in that song, though. He's got big hands, fight someone in a bathroom. Look it up.
Never seen it.
It's hilarious.
Well, Luke Gregerson got a save yesterday. Tony Cingrani blew a save. Jeremy Jeffress blew his first save. And here are your news and notes to end the show. David Wright returned to the Mets lineup. Jimmy Peretta started third base and homered for the Blue Jays. Welcome back, Jimmy. Yeah, Josh Donaldson got a little breather. Jed Lowrie hoping to be off the DL in a week when he is first eligible. The Angels put Giovanni Soto on the DL. They called up Jet Bandy. Cool name. Alex Rodriguez will not be back today. Boston has homered in 19 straight games, which ties a franchise record. Trace Thompson started again for the Dodgers in an AL park at the Angels. And Atlanta sent Aaron Blair to the minors. And that's it for a strange show. Very, very strange show. You and I am a strange show. I'm not going to dispute that. But I want to thank Heath and Chris and Al. Great stuff. That's all I got to say, guys. Have a glorious day.
Thank you, Adam.
Canadians on Crunchables now.
Yeah.